Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show. My name is Josh. I'm an entrepreneur. I travel around Orlando and having conversations with entrepreneurs and investors and the people who support the community here. On today's show, we're going to have a conversation with Kristen Wiley, the CEO and founder of Statusphere. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what is Statusphere?
So I'm Kristen Wiley, founder of Statusphere, and we're an influencer marketing platform, but we work with micro-influencers. So essentially, we ship products to micro-influencers in exchange for them posting about it on social media, and brands pay us to be in the boxes we ship out. So it's a little snippet of it.
Right on. So what you said you're an influencer platform, and you focus on micro-influencers. Mm-hmm. Could you give us maybe the details on micro-influencer, macro?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So my background was from the agency realm, where I used to do influencer marketing for different brands, and we would reach out to different types of influencers, and we started finding that these smaller influencers, which are called micro-influencers, who maybe have, let's say, the way we deem it is like 5,000 to 25,000 followers versus somebody with, you know, over 100,000 followers, kind of those start to get to macro level, million plus, you know, that area. We found that these smaller ones are not only more affordable from just a cost perspective, but that you can also get better results in terms of engagement rate. On average, they have four times the engagement rate, which means how many likes and comments they get for how many followers they get. So you can actually, if you get a bunch of these influencers together, you can get bigger reach. So that was the hard part that we found. We were like, you know, these micro influencers were working better, but you have to get a bunch of them posting at once in order to make impact. So that's what Statusphere was designed around, was to activate hundreds in a matter of a short period of time in like 30 days. So our goal is right now we can get hundreds posting in 30 days. We want to get to like thousands posting so that we can really make an impact.
Right on. So in terms of micro versus macro, so if I had like Michael Jordan, for example, and he was showing some underwear or some Hanes t-shirt, right? He could post that, or you could get 1,000 or 100 micro-influencers posting these kind of things.
Yeah.
And you could probably have a bigger impact and more conversions on the micro community.
Correct. That's what we're finding. And not only is it – so there's a bunch of benefits. There's the more engagement rate, more content. So you have Michael Jordan, and now Michael Jordan, you can probably get thousands of micro-influencers because he's so expensive. But, you know, you're getting more content. You're not just getting those few shots with him in it. You're now getting 1,000 people, individuals that are more relatable, and also the authenticity is higher too because they're doing it normally in exchange for the product itself. So it's just a lot more authentic because they're attainable. They seem like, oh, I can be like this person versus I can be Michael Jordan.
Yeah, true. So how did you get started in this? You said you came from an agency world, but like, how did you come up with the idea? Walk us through from working for someone else to taking the leap and working for yourself.
Yeah, so actually, I never thought I'd start my own company. I mean, I guess I was one of those people that always had like a little side hustle thing. So I did have that, but I wasn't like, I didn't go to school for business. I went to school for advertising, public relations, and I went to UCF. So go Knights, they're nearby. that's what brought me to Orlando. But when I was in college, actually, I had a professor, and actually he's pretty prevalent in the community. He was an adjunct professor at the time called Jim Hobart. A lot of people know him because he's a photographer around town. And he told me, and I remember the first class, and he's like, the only thing that's going to make your age a benefit when you go to get a job is learning everything you can about social media, and you should start a blog. So he told our whole class this. And this was like our intro to advertising class. And that night, I actually started a blog because he said that. So that night I was like, I don't even know what I'm going to blog about, but I like baking. I always liked baking. So I started a food blog, and it was like called We're Calling Shenanigans. It's still up there somewhere. And I would test out Pinterest projects and food and then like show you if it was actually like call shenanigans on it if it wasn't able to do it. So that's actually how I got into the space, is I just made this blog because Jim Hobart told us we should. And he was so right. Like, I learned way more in starting that blog about social media, about marketing, about SEO, about everything that I ever would have learned in any class that I ever had. So I always thank him so much for doing that, because I would never been here today if he didn't tell me that one thing. But yeah, so I started the blog. I started realizing that these bloggers were getting paid by brands. And I was like, that's going to be my goal. I want to get like work with a brand. So I made that like a main goal of mine. And in a year, after a year of blogging, I got like my first products for free. Then I started getting paid a little bit. So it started being this like little side hustle. I get paid a few hundred dollars to post. I joined some influencer marketing networks as an influencer. So I was like, I was on there, I put my blog up and I would get contracts with Hershey's or Coca-Cola. And I started working with some bigger brands. So it was really fun. I just loved it. Creating content was always just like, it was just like my fun hobby. And then I started monetizing it. So I was on that side of things. And then in the meantime, I was getting ready to graduate. I was already working at an agency. They were looking to start an influencer marketing kind of division at the agency. So they looked at me and they were like, well, you already have a blog and understand the influencer side. How hard can it be, like, do the brand side? So I was like, okay, I'll take a stab at it. They gave me some budget. I got to buy some, like, be on the platforms as a brand now. So now I was on the platforms as an influencer and a brand. And I just started seeing all these crazy holes between the two. First of all, I was like, this is crazy because brands are paying so much money for this. And like on the influencer side, like I didn't even realize how big of a market it was when I was an influencer. And then when I started talking to brands and how much they were willing to pay, I was like, this is nuts that you're going to pay $2,000 for a software that just shows you influencers and doesn't even do any of the work. So that's where the ideas started happening. I would talk to my influencer friends and we'd talk about how we'd actually go buy products and take photos with them and return them, because we couldn't afford to like review all these products. So I was like, what if there was a subscription box for influencers? I know the brands would pay for this because I'm on the brand side and they pay for all sorts of these platforms. And I started doing research. So that's where the idea started. And I actually like had the idea like 2 years before I even started the company. And I came up with the name like a year before starting. I like had bought the domain name. So that's how long it took to actually make the jump. But I had like, it was just sitting there for a really long time.
So from shenanigans to Statusphere, yeah. How did you come up with the name?
So
and break it down for us.
Yeah. What it means. So, yeah, the name, that was a hard process to come up with. So I had the idea. And actually, so Greenhouse Agency is the agency I worked at. I love Greenhouse. They actually still do my marketing. And they're amazing and they're local. They're actually out of Lake Mary. And Caleb is the CEO over there. And he's not a normal CEO or like boss. He was like so supportive that I had this idea. I feel like most bosses would not be supportive when you come up with like an idea to possibly like start your own company. And he was like so supportive of it, loved it, thought it was great. And he was actually helped me come up with the name for it. So I remember coming into work and I would like write down all these ideas for names. And then he was the one that actually like, I had Stratosphere written down and I had Status written down. And he's like, what about Statusphere? So Caleb actually came up with the name for it. So I definitely give him credit. And I worked with Greenhouse to do all the branding and our website and everything.
Very cool. So Status is...
Statusphere. So the whole thing is that like we wanted to make it seem a little bit exclusive, but also like a community. So it was a really good bridge between the two. And when we Googled the term Statusphere, it was only used one time in 2012 in a publication where someone described the blogger sphere as the Statusphere. So it ended up being like perfect. Like when I saw that and no one was using it, I was like, was meant to be. So, and it was like the first name where I was like, oh, that's what I want.
Yeah. And you bought the domain a year before you even launched the company.
Yes.
So you had the vision.
Yes, I did. So I bought joinstatus.com because Statusphere was too expensive. And then we now have Statusphere. So full circle. We have Statusphere.com as well. But I got joinstatus because I wanted to find something that still sounded good. But yeah, so that's how long it took before actually like starting it.
What took so long?
I mean, I loved my job, so I think that was just, it's interesting. I think a lot of people like leave because they don't like their job and they want to start something new, but I actually loved my job at Greenhouse. So there wasn't that urge to leave. And then also like, you know, just like, how do you do it? Like, I didn't know where to start. I didn't know what I was doing. And actually the way I got into it was I used to be a volunteer at 1 Million Cups. So if you're familiar with that, they're the Kauffman Foundation. I founded it. And every Wednesday they meet at, is it still at Rollins? Rollins mm-hmm. College. And two entrepreneurs present every week. So I would go to that as a networking event because I used to do new business development as well. So I started seeing these entrepreneurs pitching and like it just made me feel like I could do it, you know, like kind of got bit by the bug per se. And I actually saw Sunira from Fat Merchant pitch there. It was just her. She had no team. And I actually, we ended up like working with her. So I sold her to work with Greenhouse. And we did her branding, the pig. We did her whole marketing strategy. It was so fun. So working with Sunira, like, she was the one that made me feel like it was, like, attainable. Because it was just, like, seeing somebody who reminded me of myself, like, doing it was, like, I think really important. So I always tell her that, too. And she's still one of my mentors. She helps me so much. And, like, yeah, I've definitely used all the resources in the community all around.
This is a really tight community. So what advice do you have for entrepreneurs out there who maybe see themselves starting something, they bought the domain, and it's sitting there in the drawer or in, you know, whatever hosting site. What advice do you have for people out there sitting on a domain?
Yeah, I would say, like, launch the MVP, like, or just something just to test the water. So what I did, what actually let me do the jump was I found out about Starter Studio. So Starter Studio is a nonprofit program here in Central Florida that you can come in with an idea stage and you apply, and it's a free program. And then they go through, I think it's like 10 weeks or I'll find out the exact, it's about 3 months program. And they help you actually validate your idea. So they teach you that, like, you don't need to build out, like, if you have the domain name, that's all you really need. You don't need to build out your full platform that costs $100,000. Just build something that proves the concept. So that's what we did, is I just built, I rigged a landing page that just said, like, apply, influencers apply here. And I messaged 10 influencers on Instagram, sent, like, with the link to apply. And the next day I woke up and, like, 20 influencers applied. And I was like, okay, well, I think we have something here. So I, something as simple as that kind of validated my idea. And that's what I used when I applied to Starter Studio. I told them about this. And then they kind of helped me from there with a lot of the business coaching and things I didn't really learn about in school. But I think just do it is the biggest thing. Like, just go for it. Like, don't try to make it perfect. That's, I think, the biggest problem I see is people are, like, afraid to launch until it's perfect. Don't, like, be that person where I can't tell anybody because it's, you know, they could steal it. No one's going to steal your idea. It's hard enough to start a company. Like, I always felt like no one's going to do that. Like, just tell everyone you can and get as much feedback as possible would be my advice.
Right on. So you had this idea. You put together a landing page, and then you started reaching out to influencers, right? So that's one side of your marketplace. You have to get the influencers, and then you have to go get the brands and sell the brands. So talk to us about how to get that double-sided market, how you went about doing it.
Yeah, so I knew that I needed influencers to get brands, so it not the other way around, if that makes sense. So I knew, okay, first of all, I need to make sure I get influencers before I can go sell a brand on, like, having any influencers at all or a network of influencers. So once I realized, okay, the influencers are attainable and I can get them, I started focusing on the brand side. And the way I did that was I did customer interviews, which is what one of the tips Starter Studio taught us. So what you do is you make a list of people who you think would be a good fit, and you reach out to them and ask them if they're just willing to talk with you about their influencer marketing needs. You don't even tell them what you're building yet. You kind of just ask them questions about what they pay for, what pain points would they pay to solve, things like that. I utilized LinkedIn a lot. And I will say, like, Central Florida, I didn't have a lot of companies more in, like, the beauty space. That's one of the spaces we were testing. But LinkedIn didn't made it so it didn't even matter where we were located. I just message so many people on LinkedIn. So
did were people resistant to helping you or talking with you? Did they, like, hold back, like, oh, we can't tell you this information, or were people pretty open?
I think you can't take it personal if someone says no or doesn't respond. I think it's just a numbers game. So it's kind of coming from a little bit of a sales background, it didn't bother me. Some people I do think it, like, will send out two and didn't get a response. I'm like, no, you have to send out like 10, 20, 30. And just be honest. I think I was actually surprised at how, like, receptive people were to get on the phone with me. And they actually think it's kind of exciting. A lot of, like, I mean, I put myself in their shoes, and I think that would be kind of cool for someone to reach out and ask me that. So I would say don't be afraid to do that. Just reach out. And my trick on LinkedIn, like, one little hack I always tell people is, you know how you have to be, like, a second connection to friend them? What I would do is I'd get these big companies, and I'd find the intern there, and I'd friend them, and they almost always accept you. And then you get to the rest of the company.
Yeah.
So that's what I used to sit there and do.
Find the intern. Get your foot in the door through interns, right?
Exactly. Because the intern almost always accepts you because they're trying to build their network. And then they're already connected to someone within the company you can connect with. So I was actually always just there looking at big companies, finding that intern, and then working the
and
way up.
And then work your way up.
Yeah.
Wow. You really started, no offense to any interns out there, you really started like from the bottom and
yeah.
worked your way to... What kind of decision makers were you talking to?
I was looking for like CMOs,
okay.
marketing, chief marketing officers, social media managers. I even got to some CEOs this way. You could really work all the way up.
Nice. And so you started out the conversation, hey, I need some advice from you. I've got some questions. I want to find out how to serve you.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got on the phone with you. That was the goal.
To get on the phone. A few ways around it too. If you are at all affiliated with a college, it helps a ton because you can say like, "I'm a student." I wasn't a student, but I did say like, "I was a student of like the Starter Studio program." So we kind of use that. So I do think leveraging that is helpful as well.
Yeah.
So
you got to use all the tools you can.
Exactly.
Right? So you started having conversations with big brands, chief marketing officers, which. For the business people out there, like getting into having those conversations is one of the most difficult things to
mm-hmm.
do. And you were doing that, starting from the bottom, working
mm-hmm.
your way up. What advice do you have for, you know, business development people, people in sales who have to get on the phone with CEOs and CMOs? So one advice you gave was, you know, start with interns and work your way up.
Yeah.
What other advice or tricks did you find?
When talking to them, I mean, you definitely want to build some sort of rapport. I also used the UCF network. It was great if I found a UCF alumni or like something that had some connection. There's UCF alumni everywhere. So that was always a good way to kind of build that in and just kind of bring the human element into it. So you weren't like just asking them questions right away, like make sure you ask where they're from. And I don't know, people I just find like are just willing to be so much more open if you can break down that barrier with a few questions or find something in common, which I think is a common like new business development thing too. But it is like when you're doing phone interviews, it can be challenging because you don't see them in person,
yeah.
and things like that. Some people have told me to do more like video calls. I didn't do that, but like looking now, we're testing that with some of our new business stuff, and I think that it is helpful to like be able to see the person.
Now, you were really early. You had a landing page. You had some influencers.
Yeah.
You asked for 10. How did you find those 10, by the way?
I just went on Instagram, and it was some of the influencers I followed as,
okay.
like, a person. Yeah, so I was just like, these are some of the influencers, like, I like to follow. And because of my blog, you kind of meet other influencers, so I, you know, sent them. They definitely thought we were a big company. It's really funny.
Oh, that's great.
Because we had the branding. The branding, that's another thing I think that people undervalue sometimes in MVP stage. Depending on what industry you're in, it may not be as important. But if you're in, like, marketing, and I mean we're in social media, and like the branding, like instantly, like it sold them on it. I had a little rendering of what our little boxes look like. I hadn't ordered them yet, but they looked like we had them. So
a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Yeah,
right?
A lot of smoke and mirror, but you have to start somewhere, and that's the only way you can get feedback. So then when I went to Starter Studio and applied, I was like, look, with just this landing page, I already got 20, 30 influencers applying. I know I can get them now. Like I'm doing validation on the other side. So,
and the influencers, they weren't paying because the brands pay
mm-hmm.
for that. So you're essentially going, you know, you have a good audience, you know, where you're focused on beauty or health and fitness. Would you like some products in exchange for posting? And was
correct.
That the kind of
that was
message?
The way that we approached it. With a lot of the platforms, we call ourselves an influencer first model. So the platform, everything we built around the platform was to make the influencer happy first. Where a lot of the other platforms are built solely based around the brand. And I just found after being an influencer on a lot of these platforms, especially a micro influencer, they treat you kind of poorly.
Mm.
And the process is like, takes you hours on the influencers' time. So ours flips it on its head where it takes super short amount of time for the influencers. So these influencers are typically like paid a lot by brands. And we don't want to take away their value at all. So we position it in a way where it's like we curate a list of products for you each month based on your profile. And you just opt in or out, yes or no, super easy. So that's where ours is a little bit different. So that we end up doing most of our collaborations are for the product alone.
Very cool. So then you had the influencers.
Mm-hmm.
You asked 10 and you got 20.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now you have to go
yeah,
sell
the
it to the
brands
right?
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
you start definitely like talking to some local people. I did the first, so I actually just funded, like I bought some product and I tested it with the influencers. So I accepted 10 influencers, and I bought 10 units of product in like 4 different SKUs, and I offered it to the influencers and they picked what they wanted and I shipped it to them. I wanted to make sure they posted, did everything. So that, you know, cost me a couple $100s, found some discounted items and they posted about it. So that was my first like, okay, proof of concept. They actually posted. I had a report. So I had real influencer photos that I could now go to brands and be like, look it, here's our influencers like posting. So those first few brands were not paid. I just went and bought them. And that's how we got to that point. So then it allowed me to like not sell smoke and mirrors. I'm selling like these are real influencer posts that our influencers did. So I'm not lying about anything. And then I also came from the agency background where I knew brands that were already looking for this. So I presented it to them. And that's how I got our first couple bites that way.
What I like about your approach is you started really intelligently and, you know, Go Starter Studio for kind of, you know, starting as a student, asking people for advice, talking with the brands, building a relationship, saying what is valuable to you. And then you went out and invested your own money in buying the products to test it for them, to show them transparently, like, this is what it is and this is what you'll get. So you're really, you know, showing them where a lot of influencer marketing, it's really hard to see if it works or not works, right?
Yeah.
So how do you combat that? Because I think that in the marketplace, in marketing, people are like, well, we don't know if it actually converts to sales or money for us. Mm-hmm. If we're going to invest X amount of dollars,
you want a return.
Yeah, how do we know it works?
Yeah, the ROI piece is definitely something that's tricky in any form of marketing. I mean, everything from old school billboards to even, I mean, social media ads at the end of the day. What I think Google and Facebook have done really well is they start selling things based on a cost per click, which is really just math and impressions and dividing it over time and everything. But it's programmed people to be really used to this cost per model. So the way that we started doing it is cost per influencer, guaranteed influencer post. So that was a way where we weren't just like smoke and mirrors. We're like, look, if the influencer doesn't post, you don't pay. So it allowed them to kind of wrap their head around it in a way where they were used to it. In a way, I guess. So that's one way that we kind of combated that. We're still working on a lot of the analytics pieces. So right now we've seen like the brands that allow us to see their back end and see, because that's a whole other thing, is like, is the brand going to show us their whole Google Analytics so that we can cross-reference it so we can see how many sales we generated? Not all brands can or will do that, especially big brands. Like you just can't get that information. So we're still working with that. One way we track it is through coupon codes. That's like one of the easiest ways to track conversions. Once again, the brand still has to tell us how many used it, but we've seen really good results with that. Another piece of ROI actually that the brands like is just the content itself. So they have the right when working to us to repost it on their social networks and on their website, and to get 100 pieces of unique user generated content that is very high quality is incredibly expensive. I mean, if you were to hire a photographer and do all that, like, so a lot of, I would say half of our brands love it just for the content alone because it gives them stuff to repost. So, and then the last piece is like the bigger brands really still like awareness and brand lift. So there's a few tools you can use to like track brand lift and like how many people are talking about it. Making sure you social proof your brand is another piece of ROI. So like if you search the hashtag or your tag, you don't want no one posting about it. That's doesn't look good, especially if you're targeting millennials or Gen Z. So those are some of the other pieces of ROI that aren't necessarily direct ROI that like a coupon code can produce, but we try to position it so they can see all the value.
That's great. What we're talking a lot about, you know, your progress. Were there any hurdles or did you get tripped up at any point like in your journey building this?
Oh yeah. So even from the very beginning, I built this landing page that collected the influencer applications, and I don't know, it just kept getting shared, right? So before I knew it, I had like 400 applications. I have no database. They were all coming just into my email.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, oh no, like 1 week, I guess it was shared somewhere, and I just got this huge influx of applications. I wasn't promoting it at all either. So it was good validation, but I was also like, oh no, like how do I scrape these? Like that's actually very challenging. I have to go through 400 emails individually and pull all their data manually. So I was in the Starter Studio program when this happened, and I was sitting next to this guy named Matt Dupree, and he had his own company there that he was with, and he's a developer. So he had like all the tools opposite of me. And he was like, he saw me struggling, and he's like, no, you're not going to open all those emails. Cause that's what I was going to do that weekend, was like scrape all of them. And he's like, I'm going to do something. So he whips up some code, rips through my email, and it gives them all. And I was like, oh my God, he did it in like less than an hour. It was like magic. So what's funny, and the reason I bring that up too, is full circle, like 6 months, a year later, I'm getting into like our first little bit of funding. And one of the caveats was we needed a CTO. And that was a whole other challenge trying to find that. And I went to all these CTO meetups and stuff like that. I couldn't find one that connected. And then someone said, think of the ideal person that you would want and just go ask him or her. And I remembered Matt. And so I just called up Matt. He had another job at the time, and his company didn't work out. And he was like, I'm totally down. So he's been our CTO now for over a year. And that's what saved us and was able to actually build it out. So that one little connection ended up being a partnership that we now, like, as co-founders, work together.
How great is that? That he saw a problem, fixed a problem, mm-hmm. didn't ask for anything, wasn't trying to, like, sit on your cap table, and he just said, oh, let me help you.
Yeah, exactly.
And then a year later, he's your, you know, CTO.
Yep. No, it's 100% true. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about a co-working space, is that happens a lot when you're not siloed by yourself. Like, if I was working at home, that would have never happened, you know? I would have been done sitting there. And I'm sure there's many cases where I just ask something and somebody just, oh yeah, I have the answer to that. I have a software I use, or vice versa. So I do think co-working is really helpful with entrepreneurs, to be around like-minded people with different talents.
So. Absolutely. So you mentioned funding.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about your funding, because you paid for the first couple boxes of a product that you were shipping out. Then you started going after funding, or what did that look like?
So at first I was very focused on the business. Fundraising wasn't something I was really looking into all that much, just because that's a whole nother animal. and actually at the agency I worked at, we worked with several startups, so we watched them go through that fundraising process. So it didn't look all too fun. So I went through Startup Studio. I was very focused on, like, let's just get a repeatable business model. I did that. We had our demo day. This was in 2016, like December-ish. So officially I launched with our first real paying brands in January of 2017. And that was like our first, kickoff, starting to roll. And as I'm doing this, in February of that year, I applied to the YPO competition, Young Presidents Organization, here in Orlando chapter, and they give away $10,000 to the winner. And I ended up winning. And that was when I started realizing that it could be a lot bigger than I originally thought. You know, I was kind of like not thinking big enough, I don't think, for it at first. And then I started like really looking into it. I had some investors reach out to me. I spoke with them, and it just like, I knew the investment thing was there, but that's when it started becoming more like, okay, this might be an option I need to take, because the space I'm in, like, I'm not in a space that's moving slowly and honestly super proprietary. You know, this is a space that's the Wild West right now. No one is owning the space, so it's a huge opportunity, and those are the areas where you really need to get funding for. I wouldn't recommend it for every company.
Yeah.
I really wouldn't. It's a crazy process. But if you're in a space where you're competing against people who are getting funding, you have just as good of a shot as they do if you can get funding too, or if better, if you believe your idea is better, which we do. So that's why I started looking into that route, where I was like, okay, this money is getting me to the point where like I can now focus on this and I can actually like grow something. I'm going to start looking into it. And then I actually, Starter Studio has a fund. It was called Firespring Fund originally. Now it's called Starter Studio Fund. And it was for people, actually, I was the perfect candidate. It was for people who have some traction, not enough to maybe go raise a big round, but just to raise a little bit. They give $25,000 in the form of a convertible note. And I applied for that. And it's also a nonprofit evergreen fund. It's really cool, where they invest in these companies. And then when you exit, the money goes back in to invest in more Orlando companies. So it's like the community is investing in you. And that's what got me to the next level. So that happened in like July of 2017. And that was what's like, okay, now I can like get something going.
So you pulled together a couple $100, bought your own product,
mm-hmm.
then you got a $10,000 influx.
Mm-hmm. Like, that was like $1 million at the
time. Yeah, it feels big,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was like amazing, because it's so crazy how your perception of money changes. But like, it was like $1 million, because I mean, I had bootstrapped the whole thing. I was able to buy like a printer for postage, something as small as that. I was able to like get a desk, like an extra desk in the office, and you know, get some help. So it was, yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah, but then you saw like, what did the first round of funding, you know, that 10K, you were able to buy some stuff, but what did that do to your mindset?
That's what really switched in my head, like, okay, this is going to be something. Because honestly, I was still working part-time at Greenhouse, you know, because we're just starting out, still bootstrapping. And that 10,000 made me realize, like, no, this is something that's, like, it's not just, I just don't think it's a good idea. All these people who had no idea who I was thought it was a good enough idea to beat out some other amazing companies that were doing amazing things. So that, like, made me realize, like, this is actually, like really smart people voted for us. So it just gave me that extra validation from that perspective that this could be a lot bigger than I thought. So started looking at things a lot differently in the next steps.
Sure. And then you went after more, you actually went on a fundraising path. Is that how you went?
So from there, I had some investors reach out. I was talking. I actually got some offers. I didn't take them just because I was so early. It was still just me. And I just wasn't, like, I wasn't ready to take it on. Like, I was like, look, I still have stuff to get together. And I'm really glad I didn't take it and I waited. Because, like, obviously the deal wouldn't have been as good. But I wouldn't, there's so many people that would have taken it if they didn't know any better and they didn't have that support system. So I waited. I got the Firespring Fund money. That's when I really started, like, they helped me with my pitch deck. They helped me with everything from that perspective. So that program was from July till October. So it was exactly a year ago, like this week, I did my demo day from Firespring Fund. So I actually pitched, that was my first time pitching real investors, like in that format. And that was just like a whole nother experience. So I did that pitch demo day, and I was so lucky I had that because I had all of this materials that I then leveraged with. So then I moved into the actual fundraising, which I guess I can go into the San Francisco piece. So what happened was after October, so this time last year, I did that pitch. We pitched a lot of Florida investors. A few Atlanta investors were at this big showcase. They were great. They were nice. We spoke with them a lot. I was still just learning this fundraising process. I didn't fully understand it. I'm applying to everything I can apply to. And I had a friend who was like, you should apply to this thing called Founder University in San Francisco. This guy called Jason Calacanis, he runs it. He's a big deal out there. I actually didn't know who he was at the time. And I just applied for it, like a week before like it was due. I applied for it. I found out I got in 7 or 6 days before I had to be there. So you just had to get yourself there. And it was a 2-day workshop. And with the chance to pitch Jason, I thought it was a scam. I was like, this sounds like a scam. You know how many, there are tons of entrepreneur scam things out there that you have to go, like, that are just not good. So I actually went to one of our mentors, Donna, from Starter Studio / Firespring Fund. And I was like, Donna, I got into this thing. Like, is it a scam? And she's like, no, you need to go. Like, you're buying the ticket and going. Like, you go. So I'd never been to San Francisco. I bought a plane ticket. This is another great story. I actually stayed with a woman that I met on LinkedIn from when I did customer interviews.
Nice.
She ended up becoming one of my best mentors. And I was like, I called up Sinead and I was like, Sinead, I'm going to San Francisco. And she's like, stay with me. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. So, because it was 7 days away, I would have had to pay so much money. So I stayed with her and I got there early. And it turned out the first few people that got there early got to pitch Jason. So another coincidence, there were so many like weird coincidences that happened. Got to pitch him. If you don't know who he is, he has 6 unicorn investments now. So that means companies valued at over $1 billion. So he's one of the first investors in Uber, Robinhood, Tumblr. He has quite the resume. And he's very blunt. So the person who pitched in front of me pitched and got ripped to shreds.
Oh my gosh, were you nervous? Like,
I've never been more nervous in my entire life than when I was sitting there. Like, it was live streamed. And he ripped this guy. He's like, your business model is that. Like, you know it. Like, he like completely rips him. And then I go up. It's a 2-minute pitch. So, like, the fastest pitch I've ever done.
2-minute pitch.
2 minutes. You have to get everything across in 2 minutes. The goal is to get another follow-up meeting with him. So I did the pitch. He ended up loving it. He said I'd be perfect for his accelerator program. And then I got the follow-up meeting. And then at the very end, he's like, where are you based? And I was like, Orlando. And he's like, oh, that's a problem. And he went on like a 5-minute rant about how Florida businesses are scams and he hates Florida. And then I came back and told him all the reasons why Florida was beneficial and why Orlando was beneficial. And he's actually like, oh, those are good points. You got the meeting. Let's talk. So
what were the points that you shared with him on why Orlando?
So the number one reason was the cost of living. I was like, the very first thing I said, I was like, well, if I raise $1 million in, you know, San Francisco, it's like, you know, raising like 5 million or like, I think I said 3 million. He's like, probably more like 6 million. Like he had said it was even more. I was like, exactly. He's like, that's a good point. And, I was like, and the talent, like we actually have a ton of schools here that if you can, like, you're like the shiny object, you know, you're not in San Francisco. Like it's so hard to retain talent because they're just running off to Facebook or Google or whoever. Here, like you can be the great company that they want to stay at. So people stay way longer. So that's like a huge problem they have out there. So we talked a little bit about that. So those were some of the key things that he was like, oh, those are both good points. And I was like, exactly.
Yeah. So, awesome. Yeah. Well, we welcome Jason to come visit us anytime. Check out Orlando. Yeah. He's now invested in two businesses now.
Well,
here in Orlando.
Here's the crazy part. Well, I referred the other one, but yeah. He actually, we were his first Florida company. Now I believe he has like 5.
Oh, wow. He's up to 5.
Because he has 2 or 3 other, might be even 6, 2 or 3 other that are in Miami.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Florida's good, man. Yeah. We're building and growing.
Yeah.
So you got into his program and you got that follow-up meeting. Then what happened?
So we didn't get into his program. He just said you'd be perfect for it. So we applied for it. We got the follow-up meeting, went back to San Francisco for the follow-up meeting in like February. Went out, like we had to do 2 sets of interviews. So we did interviews with like other people that were in his accelerator program and then the one ultimately with him. I will say of all the people I've talked to, it's just a lot of times investors don't understand your space. They give you a lot of bad advice that you have to kind of just take because you don't want to like offend them. He's one of the smartest people I've ever met. Like his brain just moves so quick. And in like the first few minutes of the interview of talking with him, like he already was thinking so far ahead for our company and so big and in ways that were so smart that like you just can't match that anywhere. And I brought Teresa, our COO, with us because I was explaining this to her. Because like if you watch his videos, he can come across very strong, very abrasive.
Yeah.
But I was like, you don't understand, like he's good. He's a good guy. You gotta like he knows his stuff and he's just no fluff. And once we met with him, she was sold. She was like, yeah, you're right. This guy is definitely the right guy to partner with. Because it's, you know, you need to make sure you want to work with them. And yeah, so that first interview was great. And you can just tell he definitely knows his stuff.
So you actually didn't get into his program.
We did.
Okay, you did.
We did get into it. Okay. Yeah, so it was all part of the interview kind of process. They kind of grouped us together with our meeting and interview because they thought we'd be good for the program.
Oh, cool.
So we got into the program, and that started in like March, April. 12-week program. You got every 4th week off. So it kind of ran through July. So I was flying out like weekly for like those months.
Oh, wow. What was that like? Being in that kind of intense program, being in a new area, flying back and forth, running a company.
Yeah, that was crazy. I think, yeah, it's like a whirlwind. When I look back at it, I can't believe that I did it, that we did it. If I didn't have Teresa, it would not have happened. Teresa's amazing. She held down the fort most of the time when I was gone. So that whole process, the very first day of the program, you walk in, they didn't even really... They're better about telling people this because we told them. You need to get better at telling them. We walk in. You're in, like, this middle of San Francisco, huge office, like, looking over San Francisco, ridiculous view, and you pitch 6 investors as soon as you walk in.
Right off the bat.
Right off the bat. There was no, it was like, hello, you're at Accelerator Class 1. This person will be pitching first, this one will second, this one third, and you pitched a 3-minute pitch.
Wow.
In front of everyone. And there was, like, everyone in the cohort had no idea that that was how the first day was going to go. I was so lucky that I was prepared for it because I had gone through Starter Studio and had done all of these pitches, practices, where some of the other companies hadn't.
So
I was very, very, very lucky. And every week for 12 weeks, we pitched a new 6 investors, like top investors. Like, you just can't even believe you're in the room with half of them. So
you're spending a lot of time practicing your pitch and pitching to investors. all day long, and then you get bombarded with the questions afterwards. Mm-hmm. So you get a few minutes of pitch and then Q&A. Mm-hmm. What kind of questions were some of these investors asking you? Give us some good questions and then maybe some off-the-wall questions that you're like, why would you ask that?
Well, the questions in San Francisco, I will find, are very different than Orlando investor questions. They just want to think so much bigger.
Okay.
If you think I will say this, if you think too big in Orlando and you show too big of numbers, it can hurt you. Where in San Francisco, that's all they want to see. They want you to just blow it out of the water because they're looking for that one big one to billion-dollar company. Where Orlando, I feel like it's harder for them to see. So that is just something that's interesting, and I think it will take time to shift. And they've just been doing it for so long out there. It's not normal out there either. They're their own little bubble. But in terms of questions, I mean, you have your classic ones, everything from competition to, like, my number one question I always get asked is, when will you expand to male influencers? It's like our number one question because we only work with female influencers right now. And my answer to that is, like, women control over 70% of buying decisions, and, like, there's more female influencers. It just makes sense for us to focus on that. We can expand into it, but, like, but that's like our number one question that we get asked.
My wife influences all the buying decisions.
I was like, even men's, even like men's products, women have a huge influence on it. So yeah. It's very interesting. So I'm like, I don't know. And then because investors are typically male, I will say, like, it's very, very typical. I think that that's why they want to be understand it more. But that's like our number one question. I mean, they really just span. I mean, you have like the question. Everyone always loves to ask, like, what keeps you up at night? I feel like that's something they always like to ask you. And I'm always like,
Netflix.
Yeah, I was like, what? I don't know. I feel like a million things keep me up at night. You're running a company. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what company you're running. So they really span what kind of questions that they ask. I mean, there's some really good creative ones. They're more technical normally. The San Francisco ones typically ask more technical questions, like, you know, very much about our business, where I find the Orlando ones are still trying to even grasp what it is, but it's just so far ahead over there that most understand Instagram already and everything. We're here, I'm still trying to explain what Instagram is. So those are the main differences between the two.
Very cool. You, I think something that you did really well is you built a strong team. So when you were flying back and forth, you had someone holding down the fort for you. You had someone who can, you know, dive in and start fixing your email problems and scraping this and that. Like, what advice do you have? Because the first piece of advice was mm-hmm. work at a co-working space, find the people that you know, like, and trust. But what if you don't have access to a co-working space? What advice do you have on finding partners? What kind of partners should they look for? How do you find them? How do you test them? What do you offer them?
Yeah.
Could you give some input on that?
That's great questions. I think if you don't have a co-working space, definitely look into your community to see what events are going on and get plugged in. It really... You can't build it by yourself. Like, you just can't. You need a good team. There's no person that can do it without a team. So especially if you can identify your weaknesses and understand that that's what you need to look for. Like, don't go hiring somebody who's, like, identical to you, because that's just... You want to get along with them, but don't hire someone who's exactly like you, or it's just not going to benefit you. Like, Teresa, our COO, she's incredibly organized, and, you know, she's one of those, like, inbox zero people, and I'm the one that has, like, 3,200 unread emails, so, like, we're very good compliments to each other, so, like, I knew I needed someone like that, and she started working with me. I actually met her at the co-working space as well, so that's, yeah, I really am big on working around people, but just networking in general, coming from that background of new business development, there's so many events, and no matter what city you're in, I know Orlando, I mean, we have the Orlando tech scene. They always are posting different events. And even the co-working spaces, a lot of times, have events open to everyone. If there's any nonprofits in your area or colleges, they always have events as well. So really just, like, putting yourself out there. And when you go there, like, tell yourself, like, I need to meet at least 5 people, like, and talk to them. Because if you're someone who has trouble, like, walking up to random people at networking events, it can be hard if you're not used to it. Just, like, make a goal for yourself.
Nice. So you're going back and forth to San Francisco. You're here in Orlando, and you're building this company. At kind of what stage of business are you guys at? Are you guys still fundraising? Are you guys looking to, you know, go take over a bunch of brands, influencer marketing programs? Like, where are you guys at? What's your focus now?
Yes, so we ended the program in around July. We really started, like, our opening our round around like August. So right now we're halfway through our fundraising process. So if that tells you anything, like our first official fundraising round. So we're halfway through. We're still seeing how that's going. The fundraising process is a full-time job. Everyone kept telling me that from the beginning, but it's so hard. Like, how can you just, you're running a company. How do you also do that? So I still don't think I figured that out yet. Just because I see investor emails come through and it's like, I need to answer those, but I also see sales emails coming through and those are a lot more enticing to me to answer than an investor email. So you really, that's another reason you need a team. Like, you can't fundraise. Not only will the investors look for a team, but then they also, like, you need the team because you're just too busy and you'll drive yourself insane otherwise. So that's where we are in the process. We're still halfway through like our first official raise. And that's like, you also need like a law degree in there too. That's been a whole nother area, learning everything from convertible debt, convertible notes, safe, anything. I can talk about a lot of that because you need to know it yourself. Like, you can't trust lawyers to do it. You need to know it yourself. So that's like a whole nother crash course that you have to learn. So that's what I've been in the middle of right now, is that process.
Very cool. Where do you see the future of Statusphere going? Like, what do you want to accomplish?
We'd like to be the go-to place for micro-influencer, but what we also like to call is like true word-of-mouth marketing. Influencer marketing kind of has a bad connotation now. So we'd actually like to move away from that term. So we're looking at other ways we can kind of position ourselves. So I think that if we look at the term like more brand ambassadors and word of mouth, that's really what we're doing, is we're finding that really social friend you have and activating them to share products that they actually love. So what's really big for us is the authenticity piece and the actual like reach, like getting a bunch of people posting at once. So we would like to get it to where we can post thousands of people posting, or get thousands of people micro influencers posting. So right now, like, we have our short-term goals, just getting more brands on board and more influencers. But in terms of long-term goals, we'd like to be kind of a thought leader in that space, in like the micro influencer word of mouth marketing, and that go-to, like, if you want to create buzz, like kind of grassroots buzz for any product, we want to be the go-to place for that.
Right on. What are a few brands that you really would love to work with?
Oh, man. It's actually been crazy because we've gotten to we're in talks with some of, like, our ideal brands that I never thought we'd get in talks with. And now, like, we have calls and stuff with them now, so I can't, like, jinx them.
Yeah. Knock on wood.
I mean, I think they probably don't need us because they're a brand that's doing it amazing. But Glossier... is just, they have their blog Into the Gloss, and they're just doing amazing things with their content and their influencer marketing strategies and everything. But I'd love to find a way to work with them. There's just so many cool up-and-coming brands. We work really hard, actually, to work with female founders, too. So every month, we have at least one female-founded product, if not more. Some months, we've had almost all female-founded products in our box. So that's just something that's, like, personally important to us, just helping them... elevate their marketing and reach out, because it's like we already work with women influencers, so getting products made by women just makes sense.
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. What for the influencers out there, let's talk to them, right? So this is a great platform that they can join, and what advice do you have for them, and where could they find you and get engaged with you and learn more about, and maybe even join your mission here?
Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram, of course, at Statusphere, and joinstatus.com or statusphere.com. You can go to both of those to find out more information. But on the influencer side, we just try to make it really easy. You apply. We do accept in waves, so it can be a couple months before you get in, because we do get a lot of applications. But sit tight. We'll get to them. So once accepted, you just fill out a profile about yourself so that we can match you with the right products. So it's really important to us, like, if you're vegan, that we only show you vegan products and things like that. So that's why we're different than a lot of the other platforms that just spam you with, like three emails a week with products you don't care about. We give you one email a month where you pick where it's only a roundup of around four or five items, and you just opt into the ones you want and skip the ones you don't. So it's no time really on your end if you want to like join and if you get in. So it's very little time. It's like 5 minutes once a month where you can decide what products you want and which ones you don't. So that's where we try to keep ours really simple.
And they can, they take some pictures, do some posts. And then they get to keep the product?
Yeah, you get to keep it. And all of ours are pretty much full-size products that you get. We've done everything from, you know, face masks to $200 smartwatches. That was actually one of our biggest wins. We, like, work with Fossils company, Misfit. So we had to go through all Fossils legal and everything. And so we still work with them. So we have really cool products that are in the box. There's a lot of up-and-coming brands. Like I said, with the female founders, we get, like, female founders that just launched products. So you get to start to, like, try some of, like, the newest products out there. And we send full-size products for you. And when you select which items you want in your box each month, it tells you what you have to do to get it. So typically it's an Instagram post or an Instagram and a story mention or blog post. So it'll tell you what you have to do to get it.
What advice do you have for influencers out there to become, or people out there who want to be influencer marketers or brand ambassadors, or who want to maybe get some products for free or get paid to, you know,
to post them?
Yeah.
A couple things would be, first of all, you have to, like, really love it. It is a lot of work. It's like blogging and content. Like, I see a lot of people who are like, I just want to do it to get free stuff. And I'm like, oh, you're not going to last very long because you have to actually like doing it, because it's a lot of work. I mean, you're posting content daily if you really want to grow your audience authentically, which is what we look for. And then also the authenticity is the other piece. So don't just like post about any product because you got it for free or because they're paying you. You need to post about it because you actually like it, which is something very important to us. So when we ship out our products, if the influencer doesn't like it, we tell them that they don't have to post about it. And in exchange, they can fill out a feedback survey for the brand and we take the product back. So we never force you to post about anything you don't like because we don't want it to be inauthentic.
Yeah.
And we also don't censor them. So they can tell, like when they post, they can rate the things they do and don't like about the product. And we encourage that because it just makes it more real. And if you're not real, you're not like the influencers, you're not going to get real followers. Because followers want you to, they want to see the good and the bad and they want to see you as a person and not just as like an ad that just posts pictures with free stuff they get. So that's something we really look for is like the authenticity piece.
So it's actually good that if they post something, maybe not 100% positive, mm-hmm. like, hey, this doesn't taste the best, but it has great results,
yeah.
or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's more real. I mean, I'm more likely to do something like buy something if it just seems like a real post like that where I'm like, wow, it had good results. Oh, okay. So it doesn't taste amazing, but oh, I'll buy it. Or, you know, the skin product, it's like, oh, it feels kind of weird, but then like does this, but oh, or I tried a line of products and sometimes we'll send out multiple and they'll be like, oh, I love the shampoo and conditioner. I don't know if the other one was right for my hair because I have this, but it would be good for this hair. You know, I think those are just so much more real and more helpful.
Very cool. All right. So if people want to find you, where could they find you? You mentioned your website.
Yes.
Where else can they find you? Instagram?
Yeah, LinkedIn? we're on all the sites. So Facebook, Statusphere, and Twitter, or Join Status, and Instagram. So you can find them all on our website at joinstatus.com. And if you want to connect with me, LinkedIn is a great spot to do it. I love LinkedIn, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
So LinkedIn is always a good spot.
What questions should I have asked you that I didn't ask you? I totally messed up.
I think you covered most things. I'm thinking if there's anything else I would just add. I mean, the only thing I would really add is if, as an entrepreneur, if you're starting, just like the one thing I've learned is that no one knows what they're doing. And that's empowering and scary at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, one of my biggest like lessons learned in this experience is, I mean, I went to San Francisco. I get there, I think, you know, it's the epicenter of entrepreneurship and I'm meeting with people who have raised hundreds of millions of dollars and you talk to them and they are like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so refreshing and scary that like it doesn't get any better. So like kind of embrace it. So that's what I've tried to do because it can be really feels alienating and a little bit like scary to start out and not know what you're doing. But then once you realize like no one knows really, you know, everyone's just figuring it out no matter what level they're at. So I think that that's actually helped me a lot to feel like it's attainable and that, you know, like you, I guess it kind of goes with what some people feel as the imposter syndrome a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've ever felt that fully because that's, I always just feel like everyone doesn't know what they're doing. So it really helps you combat that a little bit.
Very cool. Yeah. I really appreciate you sharing your story and just being so open about, you know, your progress and stuff. Orlando, we're really proud of you and we want to see you be the thought leader in the space and own brand ambassadors and thought leadership in influencer marketing as well. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. And I love being here in Orlando and they've been very good to me. So
yeah. And well, everyone in the audience, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening into the Orlando Entrepreneurs Podcast Show. I hope you've enjoyed this. My ask to you is that you reach out to our guests and you let them know that you heard them on the show and that you are proud of them, or you know, ask them advice, maybe give them some input. Just reach out to our guests. That's my ask for you guys. So until then, we'll talk to you guys on the next episode. We'll see y'all. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.